Daf Ches Amud Aleph. Daf Ches. Sorry. Daf Zayin Amud Beis. Daf Zayin Amud Beis. We are in the middle of the wide lines. Right in the middle of the wide lines. The first word on the line is Bechatoim. Now, as we ended last time, two questions came up, and we started addressing them, and we ended. And it was a little bit of a complex subject, so I just want to briefly leave off. I didn't want to leave things unclear, so we'll just briefly restate what had come up at the end of the last time. We discussed the pasuk. We began dealing with the pasuk. Shoyzvei Torah Yahalelu Rasha. The forsakers of Torah will praise the Rasha, while the preservers of Torah, or the observers of Torah, both are true, will fight them. So, the principle, as Rabbi Yehuda put it down, we began discussing last time, is that a person has to have very clear what he does approve of, what he doesn't approve of, and you cannot mix things. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, "Ish lefi mahaloloi." You see a person praising a rasha, you know how you can classify that person. Rabbi Yehuda says that as an absolute rule. Those who praise rishayim are rotten on the inside, even if they're observant, while those who are true loyal observers cannot stand it. They don't tolerate it. Now, as we said, it's
somebody that's
We would hope you can't, but you will sometimes see people who don't really care, and they like the guy because of he's a good boxer, and they'll talk highly of him. And say, yeah, I know he's not doesn't live exactly the way, but look, he's got his good things too. And like we said, the point is, the way we view it is, a person who's offensive to Hashem is offensive to us. We're supposed to be sensitive, so to speak. Not just that we keep Hashem's mitzvahs, that we're sensitive to Hashem's, so to speak, feelings. And therefore, yes, you have to be very clear about what we do hold of, what we don't hold of, and we don't make things gray. Then, two questions came up at the end, which kind of got things into a little bit of a more complicated and delicate aspect of this discussion, and that was, how do you deal, what about with religious people? Are you supposed to there also? So I immediately answered yes. Now I just want to clarify, because afterwards I saw that it wasn't so clear what my intent was. So first of all, I'm not a current events person, so I want to make clear what exactly I was talking about. I wasn't talking about discussing news. I was talking about, you see something in front of you. Let's say, we'll talk in terms of your kids, what you tell your kids, because that's a better way of describing how you should relate to it yourself. You're going with your kids somewhere, you see something happen. Now, you can either say, okay, different people do different things, or you can tell your kids, this is not right. Now, he might not know, etc., but this is not right. Now, as it turns out, people were asking me the other time, what about when this happens and when that happens, all kinds of the more broader, disturbing phenomena of religious people acting in the wrong way. And here also, I started addressing this and saying that you have to know how to define religious. And Jonathan raised a good point. I want to clarify here also what I meant. We shouldn't make a mistake. There clearly is a difference between religious and irreligious people, or more accurately, observant and non-observant people. When a person does not acknowledge the chiyuvim of the Torah, he's what we call a mumer, yotza michlal amisecha. It's a different category. When you're talking about a person who officially is observant, meaning he does consider himself bound by the Torah, it's obviously more delicate, because you're dealing with issues of lashon hara and the chiyuv of to be done lekav zchus, etc., etc. So therefore, if you hear about something that happened, and the question is, how do you relate to it? You don't have to rush to relate to it at all. That's why I said, I started with, your. Let's say you see something in front of you. You see something in front of you, your children know, Dad, how do we relate to this? You say, this is wrong. Why would a person who's so from do that? So here's where I started saying, and I did not phrase it well, as you pointed out. What does so from mean? This is something that's very important to stress to the kid. What does so from mean? How do you know that the person is so from? Well, look what he looks like. But how do you define so from? So from, and here's where I was saying, so from includes 613 headings with a lot of subdivisions. So from means that you keep more of it. If you see a person who is not makpid on something, that means that he's less from. The fact that there are external trappings means that he has external trappings. That's all it means. It's not necessarily an indication of more or less from. Now we will note that yes, a person who makes a point of looking more Jewish has an advantage. But from there to go and say so from, in order to say so from, you have to know what are the guy's standards in being makpid on halacha? How much does the guy learn? What's the guy's bein adam lachaveiro like? Etc., etc., etc. So from, before going and declaring that somebody is so from, you have to know an awful lot about the person. You know, the guy's not necessarily so from. You see a person acting in a way that's wrong, he's not necessarily so from. Now you have to be done the kaf schutz. You have to be able to say, maybe he doesn't know better, etc., etc. But you do. The point is, you have to be clear. You have to be clear on what we do approve of and what we don't approve of. Now, a separate discussion, this is because this came up after this year, how do you relate to the more broad communal phenomena? And that, I like to keep away from that because I abhor current events, sociological inyanim, which people tend to enjoy hashing. I'll just say this. Well, you know what? I won't just say this. We'll move on. Okay, fine. So really, the bottom line is clear. The bottom line is, yes, we do have to be clear on what's right and what's not right. We can't be smearing that. We have to make that clear to our children. When we're dealing with religious people, it is more delicate. And therefore, if it didn't have to be brought up in the first place, might be better not to bring it up. When you see something, you have to address it somehow. You have to figure out how do you relate to it. You have to be clear about it, while at the same time leaving the option to don the kaf schus. Not as in different people do things different ways. No. But Hashem says that's the only way. But this is wrong. Maybe this person doesn't know. Maybe doesn't know. But this is wrong. That's really the bottom line. That's part of the point of Oizdei Torah Halilu Rosha. You have to be clear and sensitive to what you consider wrong and right. You can't have that confused. That's really the bottom line. And one thing I will say is that in general, when it comes to things that you didn't see, you have to be very careful to assume that you might not have gotten the true picture. The fact that everybody's talking about something, and certainly the fact that the media is reporting something, people get swept up in these things to a crazy extent. And here again, if we're talking about what do you tell the kids, you say, well, this sort of behavior is certainly not acceptable, but we don't know what happened. We're not going to assume that, you know, we don't know what happened. We don't know what the true story is. The fact that the media is, everybody's talking about it. That's a very good thing to train your children. Everybody's talking about it doesn't mean much. That's a very, very good way to raise your children, if we're talking chinuch. Don't listen when everybody talks. The media is reporting it. This is an industry that capitalizes on Lashon Hara, on Malbin Pnei Chaveroi. Just we consider it a legitimate form of Lashon Hara, because what? It's not going to be media. You have to realize, you have to think to yourself, what happens if you would see a guy from Tel Aviv with long curly hair and an earring is going to sit down to you and tell you something about a guy from your shul that you've known for the last 10 years? Are you going to listen to him? So he has a way to get you to listen. He doesn't knock at your door. He writes it in a paper and publishes it. And now, oh well, it's printed. It's printed. Do you think that they're sitting down and going through all the criteria that the Chofetz Chaim puts down before you're allowed to talk? There are other reasons also why it's good to train children that we take the media with a grain of salt and worse, a grain of cyanide, and certainly not let ourselves draw any conclusions based on things that we see in the media. I just thought it was important to mention all that, even though it really wasn't our subject, because from the discussions after the shiur last time, I saw that this was on people's minds. Okay, if we need to get more specific in the future, maybe we will. If things were a little vague, let them stay at that. Okay. I'm sorry? Mumer is a very complex category. There's a lot of subdivisions in a mumer. And the halachas will vary depending on his level. There's what we call, there's an apikoros, the person who doesn't believe in the Torah. Yeah, then there's a mumer lahachis, who's not necessarily an apikoros, but he's a person who doesn't bother. Not interested. Even if it'll be just as easy to do things in a kosher way. In that kosher way, he's not interested. And then there's a mumer l'teyavon, which is a person who, when it works out easily, he'll keep it, but otherwise he won't. Now, all these people, to an extent, lose their rights, but it's different extents. So it's a complex subject. It's more than we can address now, and I would have to sit down and really review it again very carefully in order to present it in a halachic way. But we'll say that in a general way, a person who's officially irreligious, and a person, it's complicated. When you talk about the irreligious of today, how do we define them? That's very complicated. The general approach is that we view them as Tinoi Kishanishbu, which is basically the Chazanish's approach. And therefore, we wouldn't call them a Russian. Rav Moshe Feinstein, the big Makel, wasn't so easy on them. Rav Moshe Feinstein said, person knows that there are observant Jews all around him. He knows that his great or great-great-grandparents were observant. He knows that it was dropped at some point, and he knows that his grandparents who dropped it were not necessarily the biggest geniuses in the world. So what excuse does he have not to go check it out? So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, I'm not sure if they're Tinoi Kishanishbu. Rav Moshe Feinstein, a novel approach. It's a complicated subject, and it's a delicate subject. So therefore, I would more say, we're not talking about individuals right now. When we're talking about rishis, we're talking about phenomena. Okay. Now, that was the pasuk. Really, the Gemara's point was, you see a Rasha, you can start up with him. I mean, the point being, it's not, you don't have to worry that he's going to hurt you. Start up with him. It's a good thing to do. Now the Gemara is going to question that. So the Gemara says, Imi. Okay, we're on right in the middle of the wide lines. First word on the line is Bechatoim. Right in the middle of the line is the word Imi. Now, Imi, is that so? It's a good idea to mess with Rishayim in this world? Well, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak said, if you see a Rasha who is having good fortune, do not start up with him. If a Rasha is having good fortune, he's a dangerous person. Keep away. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk, his ways will be successful. Not only that, he actually will do well in Din Shamayim. Meaning, when a Rasha is having a streak, when he seems succeeding in this world, it could be that now in our Shamayim, there's a decree that he should do well. Because we know that there's a concept of Hashem paying off Rishayim in this world in order to finish them off in the next world. When a Rasha is in such a state, you don't want to cross his path. Right now, he was granted success. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk, Maroim Mishpatecha Minegdoi, your judgment is lifted way above him, meaning Hashem's judgment from him seems remote. And not only that, Elo Sheroye Bitsara. He will prevail over all those who fight him. Shenema, it says in the pasuk, called Tzayru of Yofiach Bahem. He just blows over all of his opponents. So if so, you see, David HaMelech is actually describing this Pesukim in Tehillim, where David is complaining about this phenomenon. But yes, there is a phenomenon that Hashem will davka grant the Rosh a special success. And at such a time, it's dangerous to start up with it. So how can the Gemara come and make a blanket statement saying, it's always okay to mess with Rishayim? On the contrary, chepe them, bother them. So the Gemara says, Loi kasha. It's not a contradiction. Ha bemili di day, ha bemili di shmaya. It depends if it's a personal issue or a spiritual issue. Meaning, if you know that a person is a Rasha, don't say, well, since he's a Rasha, he's not going to succeed at anything, and therefore, I can fight with him over the driveway or whatever it is. You might end up with your window smashed. You're not guaranteed protection if you're going to take him on in a personal fight. But if the fight is spiritual, that you can take him on. You don't have to worry about it. Meaning, the example that we gave, you see him sitting and eating his trefa sandwich, you walk by and knock over the plate. In that sense, to fight with him about spiritual things, you can start up with him, don't worry about it, even if he's being successful. So the Gemara says, Vi Bayisema. So that's distinction number one. You see a Rasha successful, don't start up with him on personal issues, but on spiritual issues you can comfortably mess with him. What's that? No, maybe a trefa hamburger. No, the point is, are you fighting with him over something personal that you have against him? Meaning, are you fighting with him over something that you want? Meaning? Yeah. Oh, so here we're saying that you have to be careful, because if it's a personal thing, he might... Well, spiritual, the point here, we have to be very careful. I'll just note this. It's a good thing you're pointing this out. When we talk about fighting with Rishayim, or any form of machloikis for that matter, there are many times where machloikis is justified. Machloikis is a very, very dangerous thing. There are times where machloikis is justified, but the Chazon Ish says that machloikis is the one unique thing, unlike all the rest of the Torah. With all the rest of the Torah, mitzvah is a mitzvah and an avera is an avera, regardless of what you're thinking. Meaning, you're supposed to eat matzah, you should have all the right intentions. But even if you don't, you did a mitzvah. Right? Machloikis, he says, is the one thing that your intention is what defines it as a mitzvah or an avera. When there's a justified machloikis and you're doing it for the fun of it, or for personal benefit, that's an avera, even if the machloikis would be warranted if it was done l'shem shamayim. So when we're talking here, we say that you can take him on a spiritual thing, that means if you're taking him on for the sake of the spiritual thing. If the point is you want to rid the town of any robbers and it happens to be that he robbed you too, but your whole purpose is really just l'shem shamayim, fine. But once it's personal, even though you might be justified, you already don't have that special insurance. That special insurance is for a person who's doing the mitzvah of fighting a Rasha. Once it's personal, you have to be aware of the danger of starting with a Rasha when he's on a successful streak. But it's also possible that Habe Habe Mili Dishmaya, even on spiritual issues, it could be dangerous to start up with a successful Rasha. Veloy Kasha. And yet it's not a contradiction. Depends if he's on a successful streak or not. When we said you can feel comfortable to take on Rishayim on spiritual issues, that means a Rasha, you don't see him having a successful streak. When you see a Rasha having a successful streak, stay on the other side of the street, no matter what the issue is. Keep away. The Iba is saying, or another answer could be, no, both might be talking about a Rasha who's on a successful streak, and you can still sometimes take him on. It's not a contradiction. This is already a bit rough. It depends if the person who wants to take him on is an absolute tzaddik or not an absolute tzaddik. If you're not an absolute tzaddik, be careful. Keep away from a rush who's on a successful streak. If you're an absolute tzaddik, don't worry about a thing. Go full steam ahead. No matter what, you'll be okay. This basically makes it not so relevant. Although Rav Dessler says an example of this was Mordechai. Mordechai picked on Haman. Hey, we have a medrash that says that Haman was actually wearing an idol at the time. But the pashat, the pshat is that Mordechai was picking on him. Everybody bowed. Not as worship, as a form of respect. Mordechai decided he's not. Why? I'm not going to show a rasha any respect. That Rav Dessler says was an example of this gemara. Tzadik Gamor can feel comfortable picking on a rasha, even on a personal issue, even when the rasha is on a successful streak. Superficially, it messed up, but actually, it didn't. Now, the Omar Avun, Rav Huna says, yes, if you're not a full-fledged tzadik, you have to watch out. My Dixit, what's meant by the pasuk that says, Lomo Tabit Boigdim? David again, he's davening and he's lamenting. Why do we see Rishayim getting away with terrible things? Why is it that you watch the betrayers? Tacharish Mivala Rosh Tzadik Mimenu. Why is it that you stand by quietly while a Rosha swallows up a person who's more righteous than him? So the Gemara asks, Vechi Rosha Balea Tzadik? Would a Rosha swallow up a Tzadik? Vaksiv, it says in the pasuk, Hashem lo yazvenu biyadoi, Hashem will not leave him in his hands. Uksiv lo yu'une la tzadik kol oven. It also says, no evil will befall a tzadik. Ela. So rather the answer is, it depends how tzadik. Tzadik mimenu boileya. A rasha will sometimes be able to prevail over a person who's more righteous than him. Again, when he's granted a righteous streak, he'll be like a bulldozer. But tzadik gamor ain't a boileya. But a tzadik gamor not. Full tzadik not. V'ibay seima. It also could be, no, in general, it's an absolute. When you see a rush on a successful streak, forget all the different distinctions we drew. Rush is on a successful streak, you just keep away. Tzadik Gomor, not Tzadik Gomor, spiritual, material. Successful streak, keep away. Now, here, we just have to note something also, an important distinction that Rabbi Yaakov Emden makes. Rabbi Yaakov Emden was the one who was fitting to make this point because he was a big defender, a big fighter for the truth. So what do we mean here? Let's say we say that when it's Russia's on a successful streak, keep away. So let's say the local Reform rabbi is busy preaching how everybody should drop everything, etc., etc., and people are listening to him. He's a charismatic guy and he's doing very well. You shouldn't fight him. You should just let him continue spreading his influence. Is that what the Gemara is saying here? So Rabbi Yaakov Emden says no. When you're talking about a person who's influencing the public, there are no cheshbonos. When a person is ruining the public, you fight him tooth and nail. This whole discussion is a person on his own personal level. That's why I kept giving the example of the guy who's eating a hamburger. I didn't talk about a guy who's busy trying to preach the wrong things. That is no distinction. Take him on. Even if you'll get in trouble, take him on. I'm talking about finding a person on spiritual issues, but personal spiritual issues. He's eating a tray of hamburger, can you knock it out of his hand? That we have all these distinctions about. But when it's an issue of influencing the public in an adverse way, that Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, no distinctions are drawn. Then it's an issue of Chilul Hashem, it's an issue of Machdias HaRabim, you have to save the public. Okay, that's that. So really the bottom line of this Gemara is, when you see a rush on a successful streak, keep away. That's the bottom line of this Gemara. You see a rush who's not on a successful streak, if you're a tzaddik gamor, then you pick on him, even on just personal issues that he's not doing well with spiritually. So here also, we have to differentiate between picking on a person and trying to influence him. To tell a person that something is wrong is not called picking on him. When you see a person who's doing something, you don't know how he's going to respond. Could be that he'll listen to you. Go, try to talk to him. Do it in a seichel-dik way. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a person who's beyond that. You know he's not going to listen to you. Question is, should I just pick on him nevertheless? Right? Whenever I see him doing something, yell at him or something like that. That's what this discussion is about. He's not going to listen to you. What? What's that? As a form of makor, yeah. Yeah. Or a protest. So that was saying that it depends on all these different distinctions. But if you really think you can have an influence, which, again, requires a lot of seichel, you have to know how to do that right. But if you think you can have an influence, try. That's not called starting up with him. That's called trying to influence the person.
But on the other hand, you never really know when you might be able to get through and power that person. With that mental heat that's there, you might have a chance if you do it on the easy way rather than putting all the hand in a sledgehammer.
Oh, so you're asking, maybe through relating to him in a more friendly way, you'll be able to have a better effect, and you're making a very, very valid point. And here also we'll differentiate between our times and earlier times. The Chazon Ish actually says exactly what you said. The Chazon Ish says that in our times, when we're dealing with people who did not have the right exposure, the only approach to have towards these people is, the way he puts it, to try to draw them with ropes of love. That's how you try to reel them in. Ropes of love. And to try to enlighten them. That's the approach that we have today. The only time this would really be relevant is, like we said before, when you're talking about a person who is ruining the public. When you're talking about a person who is a danger to the public. A person who has made it an agenda to fight, to cause problems, to fight Torah values. That's when this is really more relevant. The things that we're seeing in the Gemara, to just knock a person over the head with a sledgehammer because he's doing the wrong thing, was talking in earlier times, where a person was from. He was from, everybody started off from in earlier times. All of Judaism was from. This guy decided he's not interested. And people tried to talk to him. People tried to talk to him and he didn't accept it. At that point we say, our whole style of dealing with him changes. That's the way the Rambam paskins it. He tried a few times to influence him. Then we have to make it 100% clear we don't tolerate such things. Because we also have to protect the rest of our camp. We don't want people following in this way. And we have to make a very, very clear demonstration. This is not tolerated. And the truth is, it's not just a technical issue, it's also a principle issue. There's a kitrug on the klal. Kitrug means that there's a taina min hashamayim when there are things going wrong. The way we deal with that is by showing, no, we have nothing to do with this and we don't tolerate it. So again, it really will depend on the setting. When the setting is such that you can't really expect more from people, etc., etc., the way to approach it is like the Chazon Ish says today, you approach people understandingly, patiently, with love. But, when the setting is such that, no, the general society keeps Torah mitzvahs, a person who steps out is making a blatant statement, you have to respond with blatant statements. That's true. I'm not sure how going to factor into this. You're right. That is the example that we gave. Generally, here we're speaking about Jews. I'm not sure how. Okay. We'll get back to some issues that are more directly relevant to us. A person who sets himself a set place for davening, his enemies will fall before him. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, v'samtim mokoyim lami Yisrael, I will set a place for my people Yisrael, unetativ, and I'll plant them there, v'shochan tachtov, and they will dwell there, v'lo yirgazoy, and they won't be upset anymore, v'lo yisifu b'nei avlo le'anoysoy ka'asher barishoy, and the wicked will no longer be able to afflict them as they used to. So you see that there's a big stress being put on. I'll give a set place, and they'll be settled there, and then nobody will be able to overcome it. So here this pasuk is talking about the Beis HaMikdash. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash, but you can make yourself your own Beis HaMikdash by setting yourself a set place. Now, I'm sure everybody remembers that we discussed this at length a couple of amudim ago. We already had a whole sugya of setting a set regular place for davening. So if you look at the on the side here of the page, there are those, it seems that many Rishonim had actually a different reading of this Gemara, called a Kaveh Amokim L'Tayrasai, not L'Tfilasai, L'Tayrasai, a person who sets himself a set place for his learning. It's already a new concept. Right. Tefillah we already discussed. Now we're talking about Torah. A person makes himself a set place for Torah learning. That's what we're saying this about. So we're saying a new concept. Just like we said about tefillah, there's such an Indian for Torah also. And the truth is that it's really the same idea as we were discussing with tefillah. When you make a set place for something, that is turning it into a regular set part of your life. It's not a haphazard thing. It's showing a special respect for you. And also, just in a practical way, a person learns better. A person is better focused when he's in a regular, familiar setting. It's actually interesting. The Meiri says, what does it mean? Your enemies will fall before you if you have a set place for your learning. So that means in learning. When you argue with people in learning, a person who has a set place is likely to do better in his learning. When he argues his learning, in learning, he'll win. He knows better. That's how the Meiri puts this. Okay. Now, we'll see more on this as we go along. We're going to be getting back into the whole concept of a set place for Dvarim Shebikdusha. Let's see. But first, a few more points. Rav Huna Rami, we just cited this pasuk that says, I'll set a place for my people Israel, and then the wicked will no longer afflict them. Rav Huna posed a contradiction. Ksivla anoisoi. This pasuk was stated, and Hashem is talking about the Beis HaMikdash. He's going to settle the Jews in the Beis HaMikdash, and then the Goyim will no longer afflict them. So when this pasuk is presented at the time in Sefer Shmuel, it says, Le'esifum ne'avlo la'anoisai. They will no longer be able to afflict them. Uksim le'chaloisai. When that pasuk is repeated in Divrei Hayomim, and Divrei Hayomim is basically a review of Tanakh. And often you have almost verbatim psukim from other places in Tanakh repeated in Divrei Hayomim. Divrei Hayomim is basically a summary from Adam Arishon until the end. But it's often interesting, the Gemara often notes that sometimes you'll have psukim that are basically identical with slight variations, and there's always significance to the variation. So, when Hashem makes this declaration in Sefer Shmuel, it says, I will settle the Jews in a set place, and the wicked will no longer afflict them. But then when it says in Divrei Hayomim, it says, I'll settle the Jews in a set place, and the wicked will no longer be able to finish them off. Which implies all to be able to afflict them. They just won't be able to finish them off. So they get
funny.
What's that?
What is that in English?
Chronicles.
So
it's the last sefer. It's the last sefer of Tanakh.
It reviews everything?
It's basically a review. It does in a lot of places it actually supplements details that aren't in the corresponding part of Tanakh. But it's basically following along the part of Tanakh, briefer, quicker discussion. It does supplement a lot of details, but many times it's just summing up or reviewing. Now, b'tchilo la'anoisa, so the Gemara answers, b'tchilo la'anoisa. No, in Hashem, it's actually representing two stages. Yes, when this Nevoah was stated before the Beis HaMikdash, Hashem's intent was, I'll settle the Jews in a set place, and the wicked will no longer afflict them. They won't be able to bother them at all. But, when the Jews weren't keeping up to par, so it changed to the guy will be able to afflict them and make tzaris, they just won't be able to finish them off. That's the difference. Divrei Hayomim is afterwards. That's right. Divrei Hayomim is the summary, is the recounting of it at the end. At that point it already turned into it dropped. Yeah. Okay. Omar Rabbi Yechanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai. We're bringing now this last citation of Rabbi Yechanan in the name of his Rabbi Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai. Gedayla Shimusha Shel Teira Yoser Milimuda. Serving a Rabbi is greater than learning from a Rebbe. Serving a Torah teacher is greater than learning from a Torah teacher. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk, Hoy Elisha ben Shaphat. Here is Elisha ben Shaphat. Remember Elisha, right? Asher Yotzak Maim Ariyadei Eliyahu. What was Elisha's distinction? He poured water over the hands of Eliyahu. He used to wash Eliyahu's hands. That's his distinction. He was Eliyahu's greatest Talmud. But no, that's not how he's noted. Lamad Loinema. It doesn't say that he learned under Eliyahu. Eloyotzak. It says that he used to wash Eliyahu's hands. Melamed Shegedoylo Shimusha Yosem Elimud. So here we see that yes, serving the Rebbe is even greater than learning with the Rebbe. Now this has to be understood, because this does not mean, but us. This obviously does not mean that the Puerto Rican who washes the floors in the yeshiva is going to do better than the Talmidim who are listening to this year. Right? It doesn't even mean that if you have an older Rosh Yeshiva and he has a personal nurse, that he's going to do better than the Talmud. We're talking about a person who's a Talmud in any case. That's what it means. A person who's a Talmud in any case, so you should realize that by actually serving the Rebbe, you'll get much further than just learning from the Rebbe. The point being, when you're serving the Rebbe, you are involved in his life. When you're involved in his life, you're not just going to be learning from his teaching, but you're going to be learning from observing it. You're going to be learning from being with him. That has a much greater impact. That has a much greater impact. What's that? Gechad, they were serving Elisha, that's right. There are no guarantees. You have to be a good Talmud. Person can mess up no matter what. But Lamaisa, so we are saying that yes, the one who's actually serving the Rebbe, or in other words, if we'll put this into different terms, the one who's there with the Rebbe in his personal life, watching how the Rebbe lives his life, which classically will take the form of the Talmud who attends to the Rebbe, will be getting much more powerful shiurim than just hearing him teaching the Torah.
So you're not saying you get more star for that than for learning.
What's that?
You're not saying you get more star from whatever, attending to him, than for learning.
No, the point here is the learning through the attending. That's really the point. For example, Talmidim of Reb Chaim Isaac Grudzinski learned a lot of Torah from him. But there are some things that's just different when you see how it's practiced live. For example, Talmidim of Reb Chaim Isaac told how he was one time sitting with a group of people. Almana came in. She was a little bit emotionally disturbed. And she was nudging him about something. And he was in the middle of a shiur, and he was trying to get her to come back later. And she kept nudging and nudging. And finally, one of the Talmidim got up and started talking to her roughly. So Reb Chaim Moses said, "An Almana!" But he said it in such a way like a person jumps when he sees a kid touching a dangerous knife. They said that the horror in his voice was a more powerful shiur than anything else. You could talk and teach about what a severe isser it is to be mitzar and almana. But the horror in his voice when it actually came down to it, they said, mamish, like a person was about to knock over something very dangerous.
Don't do as I say, do as I do.
Do as I do. Oh, that's right. Do as I do.
So the picture's worth 2,000 words. Right? Oh, so you're seeing it in practice, not just in the
book. Seeing it live. Seeing it live is the greatest way of learning. That's right. That's what we find. We find that Talmidim made a point of observing their Rebbe's ways. They tried to do whatever they can to observe more and more of the way the Rebbe's lived their lives. And the truth is, there's more to this also. Just in general. That's why, in practice, Lamaisa, when you talk about Smicha, people want to become Rabbanim today. A very important part of the process is what's officially called Chimush, which means not just learning the curriculum and getting tested, but actually sitting in. This is done in a very technical way. It's certainly not the full picture of a person who's mamish spending his whole life. But a very important part of the process is sitting in and watching how the Rebbe answers shailos. That's done formally today in the process of a person getting smicha. Sitting and watching how he'll answer shailos. When a person wants to become a dayan, he has to sit for a long time watching Beis Din judge cases. Why? You also get a sense of things that you don't necessarily get from the book when you watch the experts at it. For example, you learn how to relate to things. Just give an example. There was the following case was brought to Rav Nissim Karelitz. There was a tenant and a landlord who weren't getting along. They had a lot of different issues between them. And they basically finished off on very bad terms. Now the contract was that the last day of the rental, the tenant will have the apartment painted. The tenant had the apartment painted 3 days before he left. Now, since the landlord was mad at him, he said the contract says the last day. He demanded that he do it again. That's what it said in the contract. And the tenant said, "You got to be kidding. I did it 3 days ago. It's a fresh contract is a contract." He took him to a Din Torah. The Din Torah came to Rav Nissim Karelitz and he said he's not interested in compromise. He wants Din. And the contract said it, black on white. Last day of the rental, he has to paint the apartment. So Rav Nissim Karelitz studied the contract and he looked up and he said, "You know what? The landlord is right." And he turned to the tenant and he said, "But it doesn't say what color the paint should be. Paint it black." That's it. The case was dropped. That's not in Shulchan Aruch. You get from Shimush. Okay. Now the truth is, there's even a deeper point here. The Maharal Kedarkoi always gives the deeper angle on this. He says, when a person is serving the other person, their personalities are joining. You become a part of your Rebbe's life, right? That's number one. And you're also expanding yourself to incorporate your Rebbe's needs in you. It's more than just one person teaching another. They're joining together. In such a situation, the Rebbe's Torahs are going to naturally slide off to the Talmud. Of course, this is always contingent on the fact that he's a Talmud. He's trying to learn. So when you cause that merge of the personalities in this way, the slide is just more automatic. It's more natural. The way Rabbi Miller put it in practical terms also is, he says, when you humble yourself to such an extent that you're polishing his shoes, you much more easily absorb what he has to teach. Because as long as you're maintaining your own dignity and you're sitting on the bench opposite him, so, okay, you're analyzing things. When you completely subjugate yourself to him, it just goes in automatically. You're automatically absorbing the things that he has to teach. Okay. Amar le Rabbi Yitzchok le Rav Nach. Now, we've already seen the importance of going to shul, davening with the tzibur, but we're going to see it taken to another extent now. My time le osim ma le beknish, the tzluya. Why, Rabbi Yitzchok said to Rav Nachman, why didn't you come to shul to daven? Omar le lo yachilne, said I couldn't. She says he was too weak, he didn't have koyach. Omar le, so he told him, lichnefe le ma'a sorah velitzli. You couldn't come to shul, fine. But why didn't you have them bring 10 people to your home? You should have gathered a minion in your home. Omar le, so he told him, trichali milse. I wasn't able to, it was too difficult. So he said, Valema Lema. Okay, so you couldn't come to shul, it's too difficult to gather a minion. But still, Lema Lema Lishluche de Tzipure, you should have had some messenger come from the Tzibur. Be ibne de matzli tzibure leisevaloy de lema. You should have designated somebody that when the Tzibur is davening, they'll come and tell you, you'll daven exactly then. Omar le. So he said, "My kula hai, you're getting a little carried away. I davened at home today." Omar le, he told him, "No, this is very, very important." Meaning Rav Nachman was saying, "Okay, I understand you're asking why wasn't I at the tzibur? I wasn't at the tzibur anyways. I missed the advantage of davening with the tzibur. You say I should have made a point of timing it together when the tzibur davens. What's the big thing?" Omar le, so he told him, Rabbi Yechanan said the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Is that you? Shekoyach. My diksiv. What's meant by the pasuk that says, "Va'ani tefilosi lecho Hashem eis rotzoi"? David says, "I direct my tefillah to you at an eis rotzoi, at a time of when Hashem is pleased, meaning at an auspicious time." When is that auspicious time? When the tzibur davens. Meaning, we already discussed that tefillah with the tzibur is much more powerful. Here we're saying something else. You don't have the tefillah with the tzibur. But wouldn't you like to daven when you know that Hashem is in a good state? Is in a happy state? You know that Hashem is in a good mood, so to speak, when the tzibur is davening. That's a good time for you to daven, even if you're davening on your own. Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina omar, mehocha. Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina said, we derive it from the following pasuk too. Koy omar Hashem, so says Hashem, be'eis rotzoin anisicha. I answer you at an auspicious time. Rabbi Yachi bar Chanina omar, mehocha, says it's from the following pasuk. Hein kel kabir v'lo yim'as. The pashat pshat in this pasuk is, the great, almighty Hashem will not reject. But here we're saying something else. Hein el kabir, kel Hashem, kabir, a great mighty davening, lo yimas, he will not reject. Meaning, when you have a great mighty davening, the feel of a tzibur, Hashem will never reject it. That's like we were saying the other time. The tefillah of a tzibur is always accepted. Period. You might not always see exactly what the result is, but it's always accepted. Whereas the tefillah of a yachid, as we've seen the other time, it goes through a lot more analysis, inspection, before it can actually get through. Uksib, it also says in the pasuk, Pada bishalom nafshi mikrovli, Hashem, redeem my soul in peace from all the battles surroundingly. Why? Ki berabim aruyu imadi. Because the many were with me. Meaning, there were many davening with me. So yes, we see the psukkah stressing again and again that the tefillah of a tzibur has a special power, and besides that, the time that the tzibur davens is an especially favorable time. That's a good time to get Hashem, to catch Hashem, so to speak.
What does the Rav mean by the tefillah is always answered, but you don't always see it? What do you mean by that?
What do we mean by that? Sometimes the tzibur davens for something, lamaisa is not a good idea. Lamaisa is not a good idea. Gzeiro has to be carried out for whatever reason. But yet, the tefillah of the tzibur will be applied. That power will be applied for something beneficial for Klal Yisrael. Tefillah has power. That power might not always be directed where you wanted it to be directed, but it always will be directed in a big way. Now, we'll note that the same thing really is true for the tefillah of a yachid. Every tefillah has power and gets places. Just like we said before, it's a very relative thing. Tefillah of a tzibur is exponentially more powerful than the tefillah of a yachid. It's a whole different status. The way the Maharal puts it is, once you have 10 people together, 10 people is already a unit of Klal Yisrael. Hashem always listens to Klal Yisrael. And also more than that, Klal Yisrael, as an abstract concept, is something that Hashem is always on good terms with. Chatoim are on the individual level. That has to be qualified. But in a certain sense, Chataim are on the individual level. Once you have 10 people together, it isn't those 10 people. It's a unit of Klal Yisrael. Hashem relates in a completely different way. It's Klal Yisrael. It's just a mini Klal Yisrael. But then the Maharal says 10 and 10,000 is already the same in that sense, that it's already a unit. It's not people, it's not a group, it's a unit of Klal Yisrael. That is a completely different approach that Hashem has to a unit of Klal Yisrael.
davening. This one's davening for this person. This one's davening for us. This one's davening for that. Or it could be that all 10 people, you know, like they realize it's a tikkur. We need to all daven for a certain yeshua for what's going on by them, and they all hopefully they're davening the same thing.
What happens if you have 10 people, 10 individuals davening different things in the same place?
That's what usually happens. So what do you call the tikkur of the tikkur?
Well, no. If we'll talk on this simple level. We're talking about Shemana Esrei B'Tzibur. Everyone's happening the same thing. But the truth is, we're talking about what happens
in Tzibur.
But? No. The silent Shemana Esrei. Everybody's happening the same thing, just each one is having their different personal takes and angles on it. But it's the same tefillah. But? That's okay. People start together, that's called the tefillah B'Tzibur. But what you're asking is an interesting question, because tefillah B'Tzibur is something encouraged all the time, not just for the three tefillahs. What happens if 10 people want to get together and daven for different things? It's a very interesting question. I would like to research that. I don't know what the answer to that is. But that we will stress, that we're not just talking about the three formal tefillahs per se. Anytime a tzibur gets together and wants to daven for something, it works this way. But that's an interesting question. I would like to see what I could find on that.
If you're a certain person that daven for a certain person, and that's part of their Shemona Esrei, right?
No, but it's still in the general
refiner.
Yeah. We're also saying, well, then that, as we're seeing here, and we'll finish with that point, as we're seeing here, stam, the fact that you're davening when a tzibur is davening already grants you that tzchus, even if you're not with the tzibur, not in the same level. But therefore, for example, you daven at the Vasikin Minyan, and you want to say some tehillim afterwards, it's very auspicious to sit down and say it while the 7 o'clock Minyan is davening. You can take advantage. You can say your own tefillahs. You finished your davening. You got your tefillah b'tzibur. Now you can take advantage. You sit in a place like Masas Mordechai. You can sit for another 2 hours and take advantage of more tefillahs b'tzibur.
So what's better? If you can make tefillah b'tzibur, you better stay out of your home at the same time the tzibur is davening, or going at another time to the Beis Mikdash and davening there.
Are you better off davening by yourself at the time when the tzibur is davening at home, or going to shul and davening by yourself afterwards? Because you're asking, based on what we saw earlier, that even if you can't daven with the tzibur, it's better to daven in shul. I want to check that up. I don't know. Okay, we'll stop here. There's a lot more to be said on this subject of tzibur. More steps to what we saw the other time, but we'll see, Bezos Hashem.